The Fourth District Appellate Court of the State of Illinois has now convened. The Honorable James A. Kinect presiding.
This is our case 421-0716, People of the State of Illinois versus Michael Chapman. Would the appellant please state your name for the record?
Yes, Chris Bendick from the Office of the State Appellate Defender for Michael Chapman.
And for the appellee?
John Zimmerman with the state, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Bendick, you may proceed.
May it please the court. Good afternoon, Your Honors, counsel. My name is Chris Bendick from the Office of the State Appellate Defender. I represent the appellant, Michael Chapman. Dominique Collins's December 2019 recorded statement implicated Michael Chapman in the March 2018 shooting of Ricky Green. That statement was crucial to the state's case against Chapman. Pre-trial, the court held two hearings on whether the state had made good faith efforts to secure Collins's presence. A new trial should occur as the trial court's conclusion that the state and its actors made good faith efforts was unreasonable, and where the state has not demonstrated that this error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. Additionally, a new trial should occur where the trial court abused its discretion in allowing Detective Christian, the state's lead investigator and who took Collins' statement, to remain in the courtroom throughout the trial, and where that presence prejudiced Chapman. Starting with the trial court's finding that the state made good faith efforts to secure Collins's presence at trial. The forfeiture by wrongdoing doctrine is two parts, only the second part of which—
Bendick.
Yes, Your Honor.
Before you get there, I apologize for interrupting you, but you're essentially arguing that the state did not make a good faith effort and reasonable effort to locate Collins. What leads or lines of investigations do you believe the prosecutor failed to do here?
Well, specifically, the prosecutor failed to do any investigation, and that is an important part as to whether good faith has been shown by the prosecution.
Well, and the prosecution had their investigators. So let's just phrase it with respect to the investigators. What leads do you or lines of investigation should they have undertook in this case?
Well, and I do want to clarify, Your Honor, People v. Payne makes it clear that the state controls the officers here. And so when we had these two hearings between May 2021 and September 21, we knew that Collins was a missing witness, yet the prosecution did nothing between those 6 months to ensure that Detective Christian was doing all that he could. Specifically, what should have occurred, a subpoena should have been issued for Mr. Collins. There's no indication in the record of any subpoena being issued, and subpoenaing a witness is routinely considered by our courts and federal courts in determining whether the state has demonstrated good faith in demonstrating that a witness is unavailable.
What would be the purpose of subpoenaing a witness that you have no idea where his or her location is?
So
you would get a subpoena from the court, but you would have nowhere to serve that subpoena.
That is not correct, Your Honor. In fact, the Detective Christian visited six separate addresses on August 24th and 25th. One of those was supposedly close enough in time, and I'm just getting the location of that address right now. Apologize, Your Honor. It was, one second here. It was a local address on Green Street, Your Honor, in Champaign, that Collins had used fairly recently. A subpoena could have been issued for that address, just like the state issued subpoenas for two other missing witnesses, the Anderson sisters. And the Anderson sisters did not comply with that subpoena. Warrants went out, and both of those witnesses testified under threat of contempt of court. So what
but,
should have
been— Mr. Bendick, I hear what you're saying, but you couldn't get a body attachment unless he was served. So the mere fact that we went to that location with subpoena in hand, what would the investigators do with it if Mr. Collins isn't there?
then service can be effectuated by mail, Your Honor. And if that comes back unreturnable, it's still, and warrant can be issued in that circumstance, Your Honor, per Supreme Court rule. So that's what should have occurred here. In order for good faith to have been demonstrated by the state, this was an easy step. The state, I have no explanation as to, and I don't think the state will get up here and say that there was an explanation for why a subpoena wasn't attempted to be issued. It boggles the mind why that didn't occur between, if it didn't happen before May 2021, it should have occurred between May and September. And People v. Payne makes that
counsel,
clear.
I don't think you're answering Justice Bridges' question. You keep saying this as a subpoena should have been issued, but if there's no one to serve it on, what difference does it make?
If we have a valid address, and we do because we know Detective Christian is attempting to locate him at addresses that Collins has used in the very recent past. We know that at the Green Street address, that's from his testimony at the hearing. And that's one of the basis for the trial court's finding that there was good faith, is these attempts at these addresses. Service can be done by mail, Your Honor. And if it's not handed to him in person, it could be to the last known address. If it comes back and it's not, he doesn't come into court, a warrant can be issued by the trial court. That's just a simple fact. And that just was not done here by the state. And United States Supreme Court precedent dictates, that's Ohio v. Roberts, says that, you know, the law doesn't require doing a futile act, but if there is a possibility, albeit remote, that affirmative measures might produce the declarant, the obligation of good faith may demand their effectuation. And that just had to occur in this case, Your Honor. And in fact, the state acknowledged it needed to make good faith efforts, as it acknowledged in its forfeiture by wrongdoing motion, that it needed to demonstrate good faith before it could present the recorded statement at trial.
I think that one of the things that is reflected in the questions that you've received is that you want to rely on paper, i.e. a subpoena, and that that's a way to show good faith. But from the testimony, which is not refuted, there were three or four addresses that he went to in Champaign or Urbana, I don't know which, and also Kendall County, also Davenport. I mean, does that count for anything? Or is that just, you know, well, yes, but you still ignored the opportunity to issue a subpoena?
Those are to be considered. You know, the rule of evidence 804A dictates that you can consider either process or other reasonable means. But here, there were not sufficient reasonable means. I mean, let's take a look at this hyper-local website that doesn't even extend beyond maybe Bloomington at best. You know, that we have no idea whether the amount of times that it was visited was by a single person, was it separate views, how often were those views occurring between the hearings. But regarding the addresses, even Detective Christian admitted that some of the addresses, he had no reason to think that Collins lived at those addresses anymore. I mean, that is his testimony at the hearing. And I think, you know, maybe the most recent one was either the Green Street in Champaign or in Kendall County. So let's, one of those addresses, try to subpoena them. Just like the state knew how to do this, did it for the Anderson sisters. Why didn't it do it for Collins is the question.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, the only issue you have is the fact they did not mail a subpoena, because it's pretty clear, as Justice Connect testified, that the officers were searching for this guy everywhere they could think he was at. As you said, they went to numerous addresses, both in the state and out of the state. So the only thing that you claim is error was the failure to send a subpoena. Am I hearing you correctly?
No, that is not correct, Your Honor.
Okay, could they have done?
What else they could have done in this case?
This is the case we're talking about.
Yeah, I just want to make sure.
This case here.
Yes. They have his telephone number. His telephone number, for some reason, Detective Christian cannot provide the date that he last contacted Mr. Collins via phone. There's no information as to this brief phone call other than, I didn't recognize the voice and the person that responded said wrong number. Okay. Somehow this phone number is now somehow not become attached to Collins. I mean, any detective at that point who's doing a diligent search for this witness should have then figured out, okay, does this telephone number still belong to Mr. Collins? If it does, then we can search those records, find out where those phone calls are coming from, where it's located. The state simply just cannot throw up its hands like, oh, we visited a couple addresses. We put it on a hyperlocal internal website. And People v. Payne makes that clear. It doesn't matter about the number of visits, you know, and People v. Payne, it was 20 to 25 attempts to locate that witness. And yet the first district said, no, those weren't good faith efforts. It's not the quantity, it's the quality of the efforts. And here the quality of the efforts by Detective Christian and the lack of any effort by the prosecution, frankly, dictates that the trial court was unreasonable in concluding that there were good faith efforts here. And the state has not demonstrated that the trial court's error here in allowing Chapman's confrontation rights to be violated where there was no showing of good faith was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. The state's argument on this issue on harmlessness is essentially a sentence. And case law dictates that that is not a sufficient enough argument for this court, even if this court concludes that it was sufficient. The state's argument still fails on the merits. You know, while there's still some evidence in the record implicating Chapman, this is not a sufficiency argument. This is a harmless error beyond a reasonable doubt. And the state needs to demonstrate that. And they cannot in this case, because Collins' evidence, some of the most strongest evidence against him. It included a supposed confession just supposedly after this alleged crime. And the case law shows that the effect on a jury is incalculable, a confession. Further, the jury found Chapman not guilty on multiple counts of first degree murder, only finding him guilty of felony murder. Thus, the confession where Collins supposedly hears Chapman saying, oh, we intended to rob Green, we did, and then we shot him. Of course, that had an effect on the jury's verdict here, and the evidence was not overwhelming.
Counsel, I know who has the burden in this case, and it lied with the state, but the defense was unable to locate Mr. Collins as well. Isn't that correct?
Defense has no burden to
I just locate. Told you that. I know that. But did the defense locate him? They attempted for obvious reasons to locate him because they knew that if he didn't come in, presumably forfeiture by wrongdoing would allow his statement in. And maybe if they reached him, he might recant that statement. So the defense was not successful in locating him. Is that correct?
There is no evidence in the record that the defense team was trying to like subpoena Mr. Collins. There is a brief mention during the hearing based on Detective Christian listening to phone calls that Chapman and his mother, they had not been able to locate Collins, but there's no burden on the defense because the burden's on the state if they want to vitiate Chapman's confrontation rights.
Counsel, don't lecture us on the burden. Justice Bridges told you he knows the burden. He just asked the question, did the defense locate him? The answer is no. And you said then there's no evidence in the record that they made an effort to locate him. Okay.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I thought Justice Bridges' question was to harmless error. He had mentioned harmless error, not the burden to bring in. So I apologize, Your Honor, if that was my miscommunication. I apologize.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Given all of the state's lack of efforts to find Collins, to subpoena him, to then get a warrant, and the state's failure on an appeal to demonstrate that the error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, this court should reverse his conviction and remand the case for a new trial. Now, turning to Detective Christian's presence in the courtroom through the trial, case law demonstrates witnesses are to be routinely excluded during trial. Here, the trial court abused its discretion when it allowed one of the state's star witnesses, Detective Christian, to remain in the courtroom throughout the trial and testify as the state's last witness in its case in chief. And the trial court even recognized how odd a request that was not aware of the prosecution asking for that in the last 20 years and that it smelled funny. Chapman was prejudiced by this error when Christian testified to unmemorialized threats, allegedly on behalf of Chapman, made towards Collins, and further prejudiced when the trial court overruled trial counsel's objection when the prosecutor told the jury that Collins had been told he better not come to court. The state's harmless error argument here merely harkens back to its insufficient argument as to issue one. Collins and Christians were integral parts of the state's case against Chapman and provided some of the most damaging testimony against Chapman. In fact, the Illinois Supreme Court has recognized that a showing of prejudice would be impossible or inordinately difficult to make in any case, and that's People v. Dixon. So if this course
you started off talking about the issue you're raising here is the second issue in your brief, and that's allowing Detective Christians to sit at the defense counsel table. So with respect to the prejudice here, didn't Christian testify only about the testimony provided to him, the threats made towards Collins?
Yes, but it was regarding threats towards Collins from Chapman, and then he testified to unmemorialized threats to Collins. We don't know at that point. It's
and no other state witness testified about Collins. Is that correct?
I'd have to review all of the testimony again, Your Honor.
So where is the prejudice? If Collins said at the defense, state's counsel table, testified about evidence in the trial that no other witness testified to, how was your client prejudiced?
Well, first I'll point this court to Dixon, which shows that such a showing would be impossible or inordinately difficult to make in any case as to such an error. Second, here, those unmemorialized threats are the prejudice because of how important Collins, as well as Christian, were to the state's case. And again,
so your argument isn't connected to him remaining in the courtroom and sitting at the counsel table. Your argument of prejudice is the content of his testimony.
Yes, the error was allowing him to remain at the table, and the prejudice is this unmemorialized threat he testifies to, and then the state using that unmemorialized threat over objection during closing argument. Yes, Your Honor. If Your Honors have no further questions as to either the first issue or the second issue, Michael Chapman asked this court to reverse his conviction and remand the case for a new trial. And if we need to reserve any time in rebuttal, we ask that of the court. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Zimmerman.
May it please the court. Good afternoon, Your Honors, counsel. My name is John Zimmerman, here on behalf of the 4th District Appellate Prosecutor's Office with the state. I'll just quickly go over the second issue that we discussed while it's fresh in our minds. Regarding the prejudice, Justice Bridges, I agree with you. There is no prejudice. In fact, the issue that defendant argues on appeal was objected to immediately prior to Christian's testimony. The defense objected to him testifying regarding these unmemorialized threats. However, the state informed the trial court that those statements came from defendant's mouth on the jail calls, and the state even offered to introduce those jail calls into evidence, but ultimately chose not to in order to avoid a trial within a trial. So it had Christian testify as to them, and based on his investigation of this case, being with it for over several years, he had personal knowledge of these threats, and there was no error regarding this. Moreover, it's the trial court's discretion to allow whether an individual can sit in the courtroom at the table, whether they're testifying or not. This is Rule 615. And numerous opinions have also held that police officers may sit at counsel's table during the proceedings. As a result, defendant cannot show prejudice. There's no abuse of discretion. So the state would request this court affirm the trial court's judgment. Regarding the first issue, the state in its brief relies upon People versus Golden, which essentially states that there is no need to make good faith efforts to secure a witness's testimony if the statement is admitted through the forfeiture by wrongdoing doctrine. The state cited this reasoning in Golden in length on page 7 and 8 in our brief and request this court to follow that reasoning. And notably, the Golden course discussed how our Supreme Court has treated the forfeiture by wrongdoing doctrine by stating there are only two criteria, which is wrongdoing on part of defendant, and that wrongdoing was committed with the intent to and did render the witness unavailable. That's what occurred in this case. And the reasoning behind this is because the doctrine is rooted in the idea that no person is permitted to profit by their own wrongdoing. Here, defendant does not even argue that he did not engage in wrongdoing. His statement of facts admit that he did, and the record further supports this through the jail calls. Now, defendant—
let me ask you, since you mentioned Golden here, you have essentially argued that the Golden was correctly decided and we should follow its reasoning. And I guess my thing is, but how do you show that a witness is unavailable without showing the efforts that were made to procure that witness for the trial?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe in Golden, they held that within the requirement that it was subsumed, I think is the word they used.
Didn't they hold that when you're dealing with forfeiture by wrongdoing, the issue of the witness, what efforts are important? That's correct. What they held.
Yes,
and my question to you is, how can that be? You know, if it requires reasonable efforts, how can we have that as the reasons and law that we should follow?
Well, Your Honor, in Peterson, which was cited by Golden, that Peterson is our Supreme Court, they have also stated that there are only two requirements by forfeiture by wrongdoing, which is that the defendant engaged in the wrongdoing and that the wrongdoing was intended to and did procure the unavailability of the witness. So I think—
Mr. Zimmerman, what if the witness's mother or wife just had a stroke or a heart attack and they fully intended to appear despite any threats, and the state had the phone numbers, but they didn't try to contact him because he just didn't show up. But he didn't show up for a reason that had absolutely nothing to do with the wrongdoing.
Yes, Your Honor.
What would the court do if it discovered it? I mean, that came out in the evidence later somehow.
Yes, Your Honor. And that scenario, I don't think the state would be able to prove that the defendant was the one who engaged in the wrongdoing. Am I following your question?
No.
No.
You're saying there's the same evidence of wrongdoing, but the witness is not influenced by that wrongdoing. Instead, the witness is absent from the trial, not before trial, but absent from the trial for a reason that has nothing to do with the wrongdoing.
I understand, Your Honor. I think the argument would be, well, it would kind of in, like in this case, how there was, we thought there was going to be a trial and then there was, I believe, a 6-month gap or something for certain reasons. They held another hearing regarding the location of the witness. So regarding your hypothetical, I'm not exactly sure how to answer that, but.
Well, I suppose the judge could ask, what efforts have you made today to find that witness? And if the state just shrugged, there'd be a problem, even if you had strong evidence of wrongdoing. I think Judge Bridges was trying to say there still has to be, I don't mean to speak for him, there's some interplay between the state's efforts and the wrongdoing, even though the broader statement in Golden and the U.S. Supreme Court makes it sound like, well, once you got the wrongdoing, it doesn't matter.
Yes, Your Honor. I understand your point now. And I, to be honest, I haven't thoroughly analyzed that because in this case, as we're all aware, there was the analysis of the good faith efforts.
Yes.
So moving on to that, if Your Honors would like further elaboration on those good faith efforts, which was the focus of defendant's argument, the state's position is that those were clearly made. As Justice Bridges stated, what else could the state have done? The detective traveled outside of his jurisdiction to a different state to try to locate this defendant. If you don't have a valid address for an individual, how are you supposed to serve them? They went to these various addresses to try to determine whether he lived there, but they could not determine that. So the state is uncertain what else further could have been done in this case.
Counsel, was there any way for the state to get a warrant, as I think Mr. Bendick suggested in his argument?
Yes, Your Honor. Similar to the other two witnesses who were, a warrant was sent out for them, but that was because they failed to comply with the initial subpoena. So to get a body attachment, as Justice Bridges pointed out, you have to violate a court order first and be properly served and have notice of that before you can.
Well, there was no service on Mr. Collins, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So my question is, without service, could the state have obtained a warrant? You seem to indicate yes, but I'm not sure you followed that.
No, Your Honor, I meant to indicate no.
Okay, maybe I misunderstood.
Yes, I apologize.
Let me ask a question about the efforts. The defendant's mother is involved in this and somehow. Would that be correct based on the phone calls and messages and so forth?
Based on my recollection, that is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And they knew where the mother lived. And they suspected, they meaning the state or the police officer, suspected that there might be some contact between them. Why not issue a subpoena to the defendant at the mother's address?
John, are you meaning Collins or the defendant?
Collins, I mean, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Collins' mother. I misspoke.
I am not exactly sure how to answer that, Your Honor, based on the record.
The record shows that they think that she was trying to acquire information. Or am I garbling that?
That does seem to ring a bell, Your Honor.
Okay, I'll back away because I may be misapprehending what I thought.
Yes, Your Honor. But regardless, besides the whole subpoena issue, if you review the record, there's over 20 witnesses in this trial, and this single detective did all this work just to locate one witness. Let's see. He traveled out of his jurisdiction on several occasions. He went to various different addresses. He called people. He kept detailed records regarding his attempts. He remembered the dates and names of individuals he spoke to.
Mr. Zimmerman, let me, I apologize for interrupting, follow up to Justice Turner's question, because he asked you about specifically about the warrant. The defendant has argued in their brief that he should have been put into LEADS, the law enforcement information database, that he should have been put on the FBI's list. Could that have actually happened in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. Based on Detective Christian's testimony, he stated that was not possible. And from my experience with LEADS, I do know that it is very specific as to whether you can even search for an individual. You have to have, I don't even know if it's probable cause, but you can't just search for people, post people's names up there just because you'd like to. You have to have a warrant, which, as I just previously stated, there was no warrant. And even Detective Christian's testimony shows that based on what occurred in this case, they could not have posted that on Leeds or the FBI.
So he's not a missing person. He has no warrant for his arrest. So he can't be put in Leeds. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor. So a review of the record, the state argues that we went above and beyond attempting to locate Collins. It was clear he did not want to be found. This is also evident within the record. He didn't want to be located. I think the one time he met up with Detective Christian, he told him that he did not want to be involved in the case. And so as a result, assuming this court does not follow the state's first argument, alternatively, we would argue that good faith efforts were made. No error occurred when the trial court found they were made, and the state would request this court to affirm the trial court's judgment.
What's our standard of review on that then, on the trial court's finding?
That would be the evidentiary determination is against the manifest weight of the evidence. I believe that is correct. And then alternatively.
Okay, is it, am I correct then that, assuming we don't follow Golden, the state had to show by a preponderance of the evidence that they had made good faith efforts to procure the witness, and the trial court found that, and then on review, standard review for us is manifest weight. Did I state that correctly?
I believe that is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
And before you leave, Mr. Zimmerman, I don't know if you're close to being done. I want to apologize. I was conflating Collins's mother with some of the defendant's relatives. But nonetheless, the question was, they knew where Collins' mother lived and they talked to her. They wouldn't have been required much effort to use that address and issue a subpoena in the thought that perhaps this young man would be back in touch with his mother, or that he might stay with her or live with her for a period of time.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe based on the testimony, and I'd have to reread all of Detective Christian's testimony, but it seemed to me that he did all that he could do within his legal limits to attempt to find where Collins lived. He went to these various locations. Sometimes they didn't answer.
I understand. I don't need a review of what he did do.
Yes, Your Honor.
I was just commenting that a subpoena could have been issued to the address of his mother. And the only answer to that is, I don't know why that wasn't done. I don't know if it would have been helpful. I don't know how else you can answer that.
Yes, Your Honor. And I'm not sure if it's this case or another case I had, but I believe there was some type of relationship between Collins and defendant or something. So I'm not exactly sure if that's relevant, but that's just something that I quickly thought of. And then lastly, my last argument, which would be relevant to both points that I've argued today, would be that assuming any error did occur, any error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. I know defendant takes issue with the brief paragraph of this argument. However, I thought it was nicely summarized, the 6-day trial. There was evidence that placed defendant at the scene of the crime, that he was involved in the shooting. Text messages were presented that proved defendant attempted to rob the victim. And even if you take out Collins' testimony, there was another witness who testified in detail that defendant admitted to committing the crime. So in the state's view, the evidence was overwhelming, indisputable, and the excluded evidence would have been cumulative regardless. So any alleged error was harmless. And for all these reasons, if there's no further questions, the state requests this court affirm the trial court's judgment and the state will rest.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Bendick, rebuttal.
You're muted.
Thank you, Your Honor. Briefly to address.
You first ought to answer that business about Leeds.
Yes. So in order to him to be put into Leeds, yes, a warrant would have been, had to have been issued. And that kind of demonstrates why here Detective Christian's efforts did not meet good faith, because we know that there's a recent address, specifically that Green Street address, which the trial court relied upon in finding that there was good faith, the subpoena could have been issued there, as you highlighted, Your Honor, as to, and I believe the family member was Demetria Chapman, who was discussed about, that was the relative of Collins. I don't know if there's another, Collins' mother or someone else in the record. I think it was Demetria Chapman, Your Honor. But we have a valid address that this subpoena could have went out to. And we know the state knows how to issue the subpoenas. They did it for Andersons, the Anderson sisters. So in order for good faith to have occurred here, what should have happened is that a subpoena should have been issued to one of those most recent addresses, the Champaign one on Green Street. There's one in Kendall County that was used in July of 2020. Then when the subpoena goes out via mail, properly served there at the last known address, he doesn't respond to it, a body attachment can issue at that point. And then it can be put into Leeds, as Detective Christian admitted that it could be put into a Leeds and the FBI nationwide system.
Okay, counsel, let me stop you there. Subpoenas issued, you said, should be mailed. Once it's mailed, you seem to jump to the, without any service of it, jump to the body attachment or the warrant. I'm not following that.
But the case law in our brief, it shows that as soon as it would be mailed out and sent, we know that it's sent to his last available address. We know he's using these addresses as of July 2020 or in the last year. Case law, People v. Allen, affirms the trial court's denial of a continuance. The reviewing court faults the defendant's attorney for not submitting the subpoena by mail. This is all in our reply brief, Your Honor. And it's, in fact, on the subpoena in our record from Champaign County that mail, U.S. mail, is an option to use. So if in fact, they can't get the sheriff out there or Detective Christian or whoever to put it into someone's hand, it can still be effectuated either by mail or even publication. Our Supreme Court rules allow that as well, as long as it's the steps are taken. Now, what the state can't do here is not take the steps. The steps need to be taken in order for good faith to occur. And here, those steps were truncated. And even if there were a few steps, they were not quality steps, just like in People v. Payne, Your Honor. And
so from this record here, if we were to assume that you're correct about simply mailing the subpoena and then morphosing to a body attachment, the state would have had to mail the subpoena to at least three addresses. Is that correct?
Your Honor, I don't even think they would need to have served it to three. Let's go with the most recent one. I think July 2020.
Okay, why would we stop with just the most recent one when he wasn't there? You're assuming that the most recent one is the one where he actually stayed.
Well, yes, based on the testimony from the hearing, Your Honor, I'm assuming that the most recent one we had is that he stayed there. He did use that address. We know that.
The most recent one is in Iowa.
No. My understanding
where did the Detective Christensen talk to him at?
He talked to him in Iowa, but I believe that was before July 2020, Your Honor. And July 2020 was the Kendall County address that he testified to. Whatever address was the most recent, that's where it should have been sent to. Of course, the state could have sent it to all three, and that would even further augment.
Mr. Zimmer, I know your time is up. The mere fact that he was at these different locations, from this record, we do not know where he stayed. He visited a number of places. You're making a leap that all of these places, every place he went, became a residence for him. Aren't you assuming that?
No, Your Honor.
There's no testimony that he lived there.
I will pull up the... Regarding his the detective's testimony as to the Kendall County address. My understanding of this transcript is that he used that as a residence, but I know I'm past my time, Your Honor. I don't want to keep us here either, but based on the record, we think the state has not demonstrated good faith. That was against the manifest weight of the evidence. The state has not demonstrated harmless error beyond a reasonable doubt here. And we ask for a new trial, either on the first issue or the second issue, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, gentlemen, for your arguments, and we'll take this matter under advisement.